For those of you who just walked in, I am presenting today for Dr. Janita Richardson, who could not be here due to an emergency in her family. She has no financial relationships to disclose. Dropping out of school is rarely an isolated incident. Most often, it's the culmination of many factors, including long-term disengagement. However, some students are pushed out of school. For example, due to zero tolerance policies related to discipline, which is a common reason that boys are pushed out of school. Also, for girls, often they're pushed out of school because the school may not tolerate pregnancy. There's a stigma attached, and they decide they're more comfortable leaving school. Other students are pulled out of school for various reasons. Sometimes a young woman has to take care of siblings, or sometimes even a young man has to take care of siblings, or a sick relative, or they may have to leave for economic reasons to provide additional income to the family. Dropout is usually measured by the percentage of students who leave between the start of the first school year and the start of the next. This is probably the most common way that we see the metric of dropout. But it can also be measured by the students who never enrolled in school. However, HP 2020 measures it, as I mentioned, by the percentage of students who graduate in 4 years from high school. So what do we know about dropping out? We know that it impacts adult health. We know, too, the reasons kids drop out, that they're multi-causal and can be influenced by factors both internal and external to the school. And we usually see the warning signs, failing grades, retention, disengagement, boredom, ennui, and high rates of absenteeism. And we usually see that as early as third grade. But certainly by ninth grade, the story is written. Most children who are going to drop out in the ninth grade. They become disengaged, they can't keep up, and they start to check out. And of course, children with any unmet physical and mental health needs are the most vulnerable to dropping out. And so there is little doubt that health and education are inextricably linked. This model, this socio-ecological framework presents the systems in which the dropout scenario evolves. Disruptions within and between them perpetuate educationally relevant health disparities from asthma to violence. The impact of insufficient health insurance coverage, for example, impedes access to care, can worsen health conditions that are exacerbated by poor housing quality and limited upward mobility, all impacting a sense of hopelessness, increased health risk, and academic vulnerability. Conversely, in this model, we also see the opportunities to intervene and prevent. So given this understanding and the mandate of Healthy People 2020, there are several reasons why we as public health can partner with the educational community. First, the greatest success is in reducing dropout will be achieved where multiple approaches are taken as part of a comprehensive strategy to reduce and prevent dropout. Also, partnerships make fiscal sense, and they are consistent with current policies and related agencies. And as has been stated previously, health and education outcomes are inextricably linked. This can be seen in the data presented in this table. For example, students who use tobacco or carry weapons do poorly in school. The numbers are there. So when we partner with educators, it is important to present this type of data and also to think about education in their terms. What is important to them? What is their lexicon? What is their priorities? What are their governing bodies? Districts, superintendents, principals, and teachers are held to high standards, as we all know, for accountability measures and testing. Federal, state, and local bodies are authorized to impose punitive measures if students do not perform at established standardized test scores. As a result, though educators intuitively know the impact of health, what they're concerned about is accountability. So we have to help them connect the dots that health will improve. Better health will make for better grades. When talking to educators, you can also explain the clinical causal pathways for school failure and dropouts. For example, students with asthma, on the bottom here, often have cognitive challenges, such as lower time on task orientation. Often, too, they are sleep deprived. I'm preaching to the choir, you know this. They tend to be less involved with extracurricular activities and have more problems with their peers, and generally don't feel connected as a result to school activities. And of course, as a group, they have the highest rates of absenteeism. I think it's about $12 million days each year as a group. As public health practitioners, you can also explain how the social determinants of health impact educational examples. For example, in this slide, a child who is hungry, especially one who has not had breakfast, their cognitive ability, alertness, attention, problem solving, and memory capabilities are all impaired. They tend not to connect and are more irritable, possibly prone to anxiety and depression. Also, school breakfast programs have been shown to reduce absenteeism. Likewise, exposure to violence impacts concentration, can result in anxiety and depression, which all sets the stage for problems with conduct and disruptive behavior. Often these students become socially withdrawn, or just the opposite. They're the kid that will be the bully. There is most certainly a reciprocal nature between school safety and school connectedness. Exposure to violence can also impact absenteeism, as kids don't want to come to school or don't want to take certain routes because they're afraid to do so. And interestingly, I read something just last week in one of the Atlantic states. A survey was done of high school girls, and about 20% of them were afraid to go to school because of sexual harassment. Getting back to this model, we can see that teen pregnancy and physical activity also influence educational outcomes. And the impact of these social determinants on health, as I mentioned before, disproportionately affect youth of color. The inequitable distribution of negative social determinants of health and educational success are epidemic to urban youth. For example, only 57% of black 9-year-olds consume breakfast, 57%, compared to their white classmates. In this diagram, we see the effects of that fear factor, being afraid to go to school or take a certain route to school. And in this case, 9%, almost 10% of Hispanic students are afraid to go to school for this reason, compared to their white classmates. And of course, I don't have to tell you, birth rates among children of color are skyrocketing. Hispanic girls, 48% of them are having babies between the ages of 15 and 17, as compared to 12% of their white classmates. I'm sorry?
Per thousand.
Thank you. That's right. But an epidemic nonetheless.
And we see here also that black and Hispanic children are not exercising. Those numbers are evident as well. So beyond engagement, how might public health professionals begin to approach education about our mutual interest to make sure that our children educate and that are educated and they are healthy? Of course, HP 2020 provided a pathway and made us break through our silos and reach across the aisle to education. We think, too, if we consider some of the health indicators in HP 2020, we can correlate them to existing education policy. And with this, provide advocacy and understanding, interpretation, and perhaps strategic use of these policies in our work. And with that, we can create bridges for our mutual interests. So with that, what I'd like to do is turn this presentation over to our next speaker, who is Terry Wright.